morning, everyone. South Vietnam surrendered today, and communist troops took over South Vietnam. President Minh made a broadcast announcing the surrender, and he told his troops to stop fighting just hours after the American evacuation was completed. The last Americans to leave were 11 United States Marines plucked from the roof of the American embassy by a helicopter, and a crowd of Vietnamese looted the embassy right after they left. Half an hour after President Minh's broadcast, Viet Cong and North Vietnamese troops entered the city in tanks and trucks and jeeps. Some of them went to the presidential palace and took General Minh away in a jeep. The communist soldiers paraded through the streets, and Viet Cong flags blossomed on buildings, and the local population greeted the invaders with smiles and handshakes. The South Vietnamese soldiers abandoned their arms and their uniforms and tried to lose themselves among the civilian population. The first film of the frantic evacuation of Saigon and of the landing of the evacuation helicopters on American carriers off the Vietnamese coast has just been transmitted to us by satellite. And here it is. This film shows the rush of Americans and South Vietnamese to the huge helicopters that landed at various points in the surrounded South Vietnamese capital. There were 81 helicopters like this making runs between Saigon and the carriers and other ships offshore. The Marine helicopters landed on vessels in the South China Sea, and the Americans and South Vietnamese quickly moved onto the decks. In addition to the Marine aircraft, South Vietnamese helicopters flew out to the carriers. One Vietnamese pilot apparently panicked. He jumped into the sea, and his aircraft crashed just a short distance away, narrowly missing him. American sailors rescued the Vietnamese pilot, who was miraculously not injured. All told, more than 6,500 people, 1,000 of them Americans, were brought out of Saigon by helicopter. That film just fed to us by satellite. There's been no official reaction from the State Department or the White House on the fall of South Vietnam. Only President Ford's statement yesterday saying that the evacuation closes a chapter in the American experience. Mr. Ford's statement called on all Americans to close ranks and avoid recriminations about the past. In Cambodia, more than 600 foreigners trapped in the French embassy since the Khmer Rouge takeover 2 weeks ago began a 250-mile trek by road to the Thai border today. The French government had wanted to fly them out, saying that some of them were not in good enough health to withstand the trip, but the Khmer Rouge authorities insisted they leave by road. That's the news. It's 34 and a half after the hour, and we'll be back with the weather after this message.
If you've ever spent a sleepless night waiting for the next drip from your old-fashioned faucet, then you'll be interested in these Delta and Delex faucets. They're washerless. They don't have any washers to wear out, replace, or drip like ordinary faucets do. And aren't they good-looking? Well, don't let their good looks fool you. They don't cost any more than many old-fashioned faucets. So you treat yourself to a good night's rest. You get a washerless Delta single-handle or a Delex two-handle faucet. Where? Call your plumber.
Some things never change, like your taste for good old-fashioned cooking. But times and your time have changed. That's why Litton invented this microwave oven that brings back slow-cooked goodness, but at microwave speeds. Our secret? The solid-state Varicook oven control that lets you cook, reheat, roast, simmer, warm, even defrost. You change speeds infinitely as you change foods. Just remember the name Litton. We're changing the way America cooks.
Here's the weather forecast for today. A few severe thunderstorms with very heavy local rains are expected today from eastern Texas and southeastern most Oklahoma into Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, to northwestern Alabama, western Tennessee, and Kentucky, to extreme southwest Indiana, southern Illinois, and southeast Missouri. A tornado watch was needed earlier this morning in part of that large area. There were 18 tornadoes reported yesterday in the nation, 9 in Texas, 5 in Louisiana, 2 in Oklahoma, and 1 each for Missouri and Illinois. And 2 deaths were reported in a tornado that struck Yancey yesterday in South Texas. Today, the remains of the big storm that's been over the north-central states will be leaving and going up into central Canada, and it will manage only scattered snows now from the North Rockies to northern Minnesota, with clouds and light rain from the lakes to the mid-Atlantic states. The far west will all continue fair. The Pacific states and the southwest will continue a warming trend. Chilly air moving into the plains region will have brought the need for freeze warnings to the Texas Panhandle for tonight. The northeast has still had another record cold morning. Concord, New Hampshire, reported a record chill again today with 22 degrees above zero. This afternoon in the east, however, it'll be fair and more pleasant. The temperature map for this afternoon shows a wedge of very warm weather with 80s and 70s up into the Midwest. Cold air is across the Rockies to the plains. And for spring gardeners and our farm viewers, here's the weekly crop moisture index map. Heavy rains this past week have caused the flooding of some fields in the upper Mississippi and Ohio valleys and across southern Pennsylvania, which delayed field work. The wet area in the southeast has had some good drying weather this past week, but there are some fields that still remain a bit too wet in the southeast. The dry area in southern Florida has gotten worse, while the dry areas in South Texas have increased and expanded. That's the weather. And it's 37 and a half after the hour. We'll all be back after this word.
Do you get bewildered trying to choose a hair color shade? All those rows of boxes? Well, Revlon's new hair color book simplifies things. And you can see it wherever color silk is sold. It shows you all the beautiful color silk shades with easy directions on how to pick your color and a complete chart that tells you exactly what shade you'll get. So if you're still uncertain about hair color, you get all the facts about color silk, the mistake-proof hair color, from Revlon, the world's leading color authority.
Erwin Ziegler creates exquisite silver. It's the only thing he puts his name on. This is the only thing you'll see the Wishbone name on, salad dressing. Because salad dressing is everything to Wishbone. For Wishbone dressings, we choose the perfect spices and herbs and let them marinate in an ideal combination of oil and vinegar to reach the peak of flavor. Wishbone, salad dressing is the only thing we put our name on.
It may be that we will never know the total economic cost of the war in Vietnam. No president has ever gone before the people to estimate what it might eventually total. The government tells us that roughly $178 billion has already been spent, but that doesn't take into account all the tangible costs, veterans' benefits, interest in the national debt, and the like. One estimate by a private economist has set the figure at $900 billion, which would mean that every taxpayer alive in 1969 will spend 1 year of his life working to pay for the Vietnam War. Part of that price includes the inflationary spiral that we now find ourselves in and the recession as well. And we have a report on all of this from NBC News correspondent Irving R. Levine in Washington.
Not all, but many economists are convinced that the Vietnam War planted the deep seeds for the nation's present inflation and recession. There were other causes, but it all began in Vietnam. From the beginning until the present time, the United States spent roughly $170 billion in Vietnam, perhaps much more. No one is sure. So the national deficit grew. A deficit of $1.6 billion in 1965, more than $25 billion in 1968, perhaps more than $60 billion this year, because the Treasury has been spending more than it's been taking in. As the expenditures grew, President Johnson delayed in imposing new taxes to pay for the war, to avoid making it even more unpopular. And he told Congress, in effect, that we could afford both butter and guns. Deficits help cause inflation. And what $1 could buy in 1967 took $1.58 last month, with the cost of living rising steadily during the Vietnam involvement. The drop in the nation's goods and services of 2.1% last year, after a decade of almost uninterrupted climb, was the measure of the recession that resulted from industries and individuals cutting down on spending due to inflation. Unemployment for Vietnam veterans became a chronic problem, too. In 1971, for example, the national unemployment rate was 5.9%, but 8.2% for Vietnam veterans. Last month, due to government programs, the gap narrowed, but more Vietnam veterans were without jobs than the national average. But statistics don't tell the whole story. The solution of economic problems depends in large part on people having confidence in their leaders. The confidence of many Americans in government leaders was undermined by Vietnam, and that weakening of confidence may make it just that much more difficult to cure the economic ailments brought on in part by the Vietnam War. Irving R. Levine, NBC News, Washington.
It's 18 minutes before the hour. You know what makes a cat sit up and take notice? Purina knows.
Purina knows what cats love most.
Purina in the little blue can. Purina knows what cats love most. And it comes in a little blue can.
Every little blue can is all chicken, all liver, all tuna. Except for the 5% special Purina nutrients that make it all the better.
Purina knows what cats love most. And it comes in a little blue can.
Ralph, we're going to get that chuck wagon this time. Listen, here it comes. Let's get him.
Ralph chases that chuck wagon every day because he gets hungry for the taste of Chuck Wagon's three-course meal. Juicy beef-flavored chunks, crunchy nuggets, and rich meaty broth. Chuck Wagon dog food.
I know you're in there.
Coming up, what's next for South Vietnam and America's Indochina policies? We'll have a talk with two Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists who know Vietnam. Right now, we have a station break.
See the conclusion of My Dog the Thief on The Wonderful World of Disney Sunday.
A new expression of Cadillac excellence. Seville by Cadillac. International in size, timeless in styling. An automobile complete, one of the world's best equipped cars. Seville, built in America to be at home anywhere in the world.
See the all-new small Cadillac at Tom Easterly, Pontiac, Cadillac, and Datsun in Danville.
WLEX-TV, Lexington, Kentucky.
A number of extremely important questions about the future of this country and Asia are surfacing for public discussion now after the end of the war in Vietnam, and we want to explore these questions this morning with two distinguished journalists, both of whom know Indochina well. Both are Pulitzer Prize winners. Francis Fitzgerald is a magazine contributor and the author of Fire in the Lake, a best-selling book on Vietnam. Ms. Fitzgerald only recently was in Hanoi in January. Anthony Lewis is the political columnist for the New York Times and an occasional guest with us here on today. Welcome to both of you. Could we begin, Francis? You were in Hanoi in January, and you came away with some impressions, I assume. What do you think the future holds now that that the war is over and that the North Vietnamese are in charge of South Vietnam?
Well, it seemed to me that when I was there, the North Vietnamese had already made plans for what they see as a sort of future order of Southeast Asia. And I think what they are looking forward to is a Southeast Asia that fits the terms of the détente, that is neutral, independent, and where there is a peaceful competition between the Soviet Union, China, the United States, and Japan. And they are interested in this not only as a matter of foreign policy, but as a matter of domestic policy. Their economic plans include opening up to private capital from Western countries, for instance.
You think that'll come after a while?
Well, it's going to be slow because, of course, North Vietnam is extremely poor and at this moment very underdeveloped. But I think it is one of the things that they are working towards and looking forward to.
Based on your talks with the leaders in Hanoi, do you think that the boundary line between North and South Vietnam will be erased? Would it be all one country, Vietnam, or do you see an independent South Vietnam continuing?
Well, I think there will eventually be a reunification. It's something that I think will take a good deal of time because, of course, the two halves of the country have been living under very different social economic conditions for the past 20 years as a result of the American involvement, and that the first part is to put South Vietnam back on its feet again and solve a few of those problems. And reunification is for the future, but it's something that's very deeply felt by all Vietnamese.
Tony, there's been a lot of talk around and about the possibility of a bloodbath in South Vietnam. We've seen pictures of South Vietnamese who evidently believe that, trying to scramble their way on board helicopters, trying to, in any way possible, to get out. Do you think there's going to be a bloodbath? What do you think is going to happen there?
I don't think any of us here can exclude the possibility of retribution against some individuals. I think that would be a foolhardy thing for us to do. But my guess is that, with a very brief experience of those same people in North Vietnam, that isn't something they would want to do or would be in their interest to do. And the things that were read on this program earlier this morning, those first dispatches from occupied Saigon, or liberated Saigon, as they would see it, suggests that there is an interest in maintaining a good feeling or a feeling of camaraderie. I noticed that one of the Saigon figures, Senator Tran Van Lam, said the other day, just before the fall, that it was painful losing a war, but not so painful losing to one's brothers as to a foreigner. And, I would think they would try to keep that spirit alive. I have to add one other thing. I find it somewhat painful for American officials to talk about the possibility of a bloodbath when what we have done in Indochina over the last 25 years has caused one of the most useless, horrendous bloodbaths in the history of mankind.
Let's turn now from what's likely to happen in Indochina to what's likely to happen in this country and what each of you thinks. You've written a couple of columns here recently, which I think you've titled The Lessons of Vietnam, am I right? What do you see the lessons to be? What should we have learned from this as Americans?
Well, that's a book-length question or answer.
Well, we have about 5 minutes. Can you summarize it?
Well, a number of things, one of which has been touched on, I think, very convincingly just now in the remarks of Ms. Walters and Mr. Levine, and that is the United States can't do everything in the world. There are limits to our resources, and boy, have we learned that. Mm-hmm. And secondly, we shouldn't try, because there's a pride, a hubris, in the notion that we know best for the people of Vietnam. And surely we ought to recognize by now that we don't know best for everyone everywhere in the world. To the contrary, I think another very important lesson is the relationship between means and ends. Even assuming that there was a good end for what we did in Vietnam, the means were completely disproportionate. Or take Cambodia, an even more egregious case. To go into that poor little country and make a quarter of its population homeless and hundreds of thousands dead, for what? It just was disproportionate. But last, and this isn't last, it's just the short answer, as you say, I think it isn't just the means, but the ends that we have to think about. Essentially, what we were trying to do in Vietnam, if we were trying to do anything in a coherent way, and that's questionable, was to freeze history, to say, this country has to be in this particular mode of political development. It's got to stop there. It can't change. It was a funny thing coming from a country that just now is celebrating its revolution, anniversary of its revolution.